Yes, so I'm Jacques Pinard, postdoc working on quantum information and foundations.
My most recent position was at the University of Vienna, and I'm currently visiting Eli Wolf. We're talking about causality. In this talk, I'm going to talk about a problem that's relevant to quantum gravity, which is what happens to the manifold of events. And there's a general idea that something should happen to the manifold of space-time events in quantum gravity because you expect there to be some kind of quantum back action of matter on the space-time metric from Einstein's field equations. And the usual arguments then explain that you need to replace the classical metric with something else, some kind of quantum substructure. I will also argue that quantum mechanics leads us to a different picture of the manifold. But unlike these usual quantum gravity arguments, I'm not going to say that localization of events in the manifold is impossible or ill-defined. I'm just going to argue that it's a relative concept. Also, another big difference is I'm not going to rely on gravity for my argument. I'm going to just use the relativity principle, and in fact, only the relativity of position. So I don't rely on gravity at all for this. It's simply the relativity principle plus quantum mechanics, and I thereby derive a conflict with the idea of the traditional classical background metric of space-time events. So without further ado, let me review the relativity principle, or as I am going to use it. It's a principle that applies to all reference frames, by which I have in mind laboratories in which experimenters do experiments, which are inertial. Inertial meaning that as physical systems, they're not subject to any external forces. The classical example being a rocket ship that's floating in space with its engines switched off, and it's not embedded in some strong magnetic field or anything like that. Applied to inertial frames, the relativity principle states that there are certain global properties of the frame which we can choose conventionally because they don't have physical meaning. These being specifically the location in space and time of the laboratory as a whole, its spatial orientation, and its linear velocity. So the idea is that if I'm in this rocket ship drifting in space, there's no experiment I can do inside my laboratory that will reveal to me the overall location of my spaceship or its velocity. These I just choose by convention. They have no relevance to the experiments that I'm doing. This implies that only relative properties of inertial systems are measurable. So, for example, if I have two observers in relative motion, as we all know, they can each claim to be at rest. And neither claim can be privileged over the other. This is because it's by convention that we choose one or the other to be at rest. And whichever one we pick has no effect on the physically measurable quantity, which is only their relative velocity. Maybe it seems like I'm laboring the point a bit, but it's good to have this clear because I'm going to lead you inevitably down the garden path. So let me illustrate then where we run into trouble. Imagine you're on a ship in inertial motion, and inside the ship you're doing experiments, and these aren't going to depend on your velocity, as we know. So you can choose to say, maybe I'm stationary, or maybe my velocity is 99 somethings per something, units, whatever. it's immaterial. So this is the relativity principle says that I can pick it whatever I want and I won't know the difference. I can't tell what my velocity is. Same if I take a probability distribution. So I might imagine that my ship was set into motion at some earlier time according to the flip of a coin, and then it was set to one of two different speeds. And now I woke up, I do some experiments, there's no way I can tell by my local experiments either what the overall velocity of my ship actually is or the fact that it's in a probabilistic combination of different velocities. These things are unknowable to me inside the ship. And this is just a consequence of the relativity principle, albeit in a probabilistic setting, which is a little bit unusual to what we normally encounter, but it follows straightforwardly. You can probably see where this is going. If I want to, by convention, I could reason as follows. I and my ship are all made of matter, and this matter is quantum. In principle, without the benefit of some external reference frame to correct me, I can happily choose to define the velocity of my ship to be in a quantum superposition of two different overall velocities. And this will have no bearing on the outcomes of experiments I do inside the ship. Does everyone more or less agree with that? Assuming, of course, you're comfortable with macroscopic superpositions, me and my laboratory, that there's nothing I could do that could reveal that I'm inside a superposition, or at least it's a matter of convention whether I choose to describe my laboratory in this way.
I'm not sure I'm persuaded based on what you've said so far, because there's more observables I can measure besides velocity. So suppose your example involved momentum. Hmm. Well, then that superposition of momentum eigenstate would also have implications for the distribution of her position. So it wouldn't be true that the inability to determine your momentum within the lab would imply that you can't know anything. You'd also have to posit that there's no way of determining your anything about your global position either. But now it seems to me you kind of need to repeat the argument for all possible observables.
Hmm. I don't quite understand. Do you mean, what do you mean repeat the argument for all possible observables?
So suppose we were in a context where you could not tell your absolute momentum within a lab, but you could tell your absolute position. So if somebody said, well, given that you can't tell what the probability distribution of momentum is, it's a small stretch to say you can't tell what superposition momentum eigenstates are in. But that last step would be false because one particular superposition momentum eigenstate would lead to a particular distribution of position, and another would lead to a different distribution of position, and I can distinguish them by virtue of measurements of position.
Is this an experiment you can carry out without reference to an external frame?
Well, the experiment I had in mind was a reference to an external spatial frame that would tell me where my global position is. So if you posit merely that you can't know your global momentum, but you could know your global position, then your statement here about superpositions of momentum would not be true.
Well, perhaps this is not the best example to be talking about it, because this was meant to be a heuristic introduction to the thought experiment, which is to follow. Maybe there it will become clearer, because then I'll explicitly refer to an external frame. And then perhaps you can raise the same question and we can discuss it in that framework. But I'll continue for the moment and see where it goes. So I'm going to try to argue from this observation that the idea of a localized event in space-time must be a relative concept. So let's suppose that we are in our laboratory, which I call this external frame. This time axis is actually not really important because I'm only going to talk about spatial translations, actually. But it's just there for aesthetics. And this external frame I can take to be classical, I would hope. At least that's what we're going to assume. No need to imagine that I am inside a quantum superposition. We're just going to talk about things which are operationally well-defined, things I can prepare and measure in this laboratory. But suppose that I have lots of funding and I can build a laboratory with a small experimenter inside and finally control the degrees of freedom of this system so that it makes sense for me to ascribe a quantum state to Alice and her tiny laboratory. And I can prepare her and her laboratory in various different states and perform tomography on those states and so on. And it's not too much of a stretch of the imagination to wonder what would happen if I ask Alice in her laboratory to mark out a point in space-time, a point that she considers to be well localized inside her laboratory, or at least approximately to within some small error. So she could take a small object like a pebble and place it on the floor. I'll just call this the marker object, which I've indicated by a cross. And let's suppose that I prepare Alice and her laboratory in a state such that the origin of her frame is approximately well localized with respect to the external frame at position x1. Doesn't have to be a position eigenstate, but just to within some acceptable error. And she places her marker some distance away from her origin, A, which in my frame is x1 plus A, also approximately well localized with respect to my frame. So then she and I can agree that she has marked an event of space-time, which we both agree is approximately well localized. The obvious question is what happens when I do this with Bob, who I've prepared in a quantum superposition. For the moment, I'm going to assume states are pure because it's easier. I expect generalizations to mixed states should be straightforward, but we can talk about that later. So Bob, I superpose the origin of his reference frame at two different widely separated locations relative to my laboratory at x1 and x1 plus capital D. And Bob places his marker some distance B away from his origin. And this is just a schematic of this superposed state of Bob, indicating that if I perform measurements on, say, the position of his marker, with some probability gamma squared, I'll find it roughly localized around x1. His marker at localized around x1 plus B, and with probability 1 minus gamma squared, it'll be shifted by some large distance, capital D. This is if I, of course, implicitly I can also do much more complicated things, but suppose I'm just looking at where he placed his marker and comparing that to Alice. So as I've said, Alice's marker is roughly localized around the point x1 plus a. I can write that in Alice's coordinates just by subtracting x1 so that Alice's origin is localized around the zero point. In which case, I would say that the state of Alice's marker after she's placed it, I find it to be in approximately a pure state around the location a in her coordinates. The question is, what happens when I look at Bob's marker? And there, as I've described, you would expect that sometimes in those cases where, caveat which I hope is obvious, Bob's marker is entangled to all the other degrees of freedom in his laboratory. So when I consider just the marker, we would expect it to be in a mixed state in the position basis. So in that case, I would find that some of the time his marker is well localized around the position B. This is still written with respect to Alice's, the origin of Alice's frame, and sometimes at B plus the distance D. And you can write a similar thing in Bob's coordinates. So what do we conclude from all of this? Well, Alice and I seem to be more or less in agreement that she has, her marker identifies a unique localized event within some approximation. But we both consider Bob not to have achieved this goal because it seems that sometimes his marker is localized near one event and sometimes localized near to another. But if we look at Bob's coordinates, that is, instead of subtracting the, instead of comparing the location of the marker to Alice's origin, we compare it to Bob's origin, we find that they're correlated. So in those cases where I would find Bob's marker at x1 plus b, his origin happens to be at x1. And similarly, when I find his marker at x1 plus d plus b, his origin is at x1 plus d. So when I subtract, I just get that in Bob's coordinates, his marker is localized at a distance b from his origin. And this corroborates what we imagine Bob must be seeing. We can only imagine that he considers this event to be approximately well localized relative to his origin. And conversely, if we consider what Alice's state looks like in his coordinates, we find that it's her state that's in the mixed state. Sometimes when their origins happen to coincide, he agrees that the marker is at the position A, but other times it seems to be at a distance D behind the origin of Bob's frame. So he would argue that Alice is the one who can't seem to place a marker on an approximately localized event, and he's the one who's doing it right. In this situation, the way that I've framed it, we tend to agree with Alice, just because our conventionally determined notion of localization agrees with hers. The story could end there, as long as we consider our own frame to be somehow privileged, and thereby implication Alice's frame to be privileged. But the relativity principle tells us that we should not privilege Bob's notion of localization, sorry, Alice's notion of localization over Bob's. We should say that all of those events which Bob finds to be localized relative to his laboratory, specifically to the origin of his laboratory, he's justified in calling localized events. And Alice is similarly justified in defining her other set of events as being localized and Bob's not. And we're kind of forced by the relativity principle into not choosing one or the other.
Can you say something about the justification for the claim that marker A is represented in that way in Bob's coordinates? So that one justification I have in mind, which maybe isn't the one you're thinking of, but would appeal to a kind of symmetry, which I'm not sure is true, that simply because, you know, from Alice's perspective, Bob's in a superposition of two locations does not a priori imply that from Bob's perspective, Alice is in a superposition, Alice's lab is in a superposition. So did you have that kind of justification in mind?
No, in this, I wanted to be super careful.
Yeah.
The way I'm defining Bob's coordinates is I measure the position of Bob's origin marker.
Right.
And I set that to zero. And then I measure the position of, in this case, Alice's marker, and compare the distance between those two.
Okay.
And so in this case, that's all that state is expressing.
Okay.
If you like, I've defined two alternative labelings of my external coordinates, which I argue correspond somehow to Alice and Bob's natural set of coordinate labelings. But yeah, perhaps I should refrain from talking too much about what Bob actually sees or doesn't see. It's, I'm not sure. Yeah, I think the main point that I would hope to make with this example is that the fact that in these coordinates, Bob's marker seems to be well localized or seems to be at a constant distance from Bob's origin implies that it's a localized event for him. It's what he could justifiably call a localized event for his experiments. But I'm sort of taking that as a postulate, if you like. I'm not sure if I can really justify it more deeply.
Do you think that in order to create the superposition of the two Bobs, you have to accelerate at least one of them? And thereby that Bob will notice that...
I avoided thinking about how to create these superpositions. It's a good question, though. I presume you would have to accelerate one of them relative to the other one.
And thereby and people will notice that it's not an inertial frame.
Well, I'm assuming that once you...
And adapt his coordinates.
I assume there must be... At least if you can write down Bob's overall state, there must be some physical preparation that allows you to prepare that state. I would be surprised, at least in principle, there must be. I think that's all I require. And I'm not sure whether it would involve accelerations, maybe. But I don't think that's really a problem. I don't know. But this is almost the end of the talk. So we have plenty of time to discuss all your questions about it. I'll just close with a few remarks. So I mentioned already that I only used the relativity of position to derive this result. So that's a pretty minimal assumption, and the superposition principle. This doesn't imply that the manifold must be discrete or non-smooth or anything like that. It just says that when you consider all of the events that different observers might choose to be part of their manifold, they're going to disagree about which of those events are localized or not, relative to their apparatus and their laboratories. So this thought experiment suggests to me that there can't be a unique classical space-time manifold. Somehow the manifold has to fragment into different sets of events which are localized relative to different conceivable quantum observers. I'm not really sure precisely what that would look like in a formalism. I'll give some suggestion mathematically what one might be able to do with this thought experiment. I also want to mention a possible objection one could make is that if it's really true that there's already a problem with the classical manifold just from quantum mechanics plus the relativity principle, what's the deal with relativistic quantum theory? Doesn't that have a perfectly well-defined background manifold? And people seem to use this formalism successfully without any problems. And indeed, I'm just saying that in relativistic quantum field theory, we seem to be privileging one particular reference frame and ignoring other inertial frames, being those inertial frames in quantum superpositions. I guess a bit like if we encountered some alien civilization, very advanced, you know, they've discovered relativity, but they're flat creatures that live in the surface of a big cosmic bubble, and they're not aware of the third dimension. So they've only derived Lorentz transformations in 2+1 dimensions. Arguably, they could have a very good theory of physics, which works very well for them. But we'd be wrong to believe that it was a complete theory until they took into account Lorentz transformations in the third dimension. So in that sense, I'm saying perhaps relativistic quantum field theory is missing an extra set of symmetries. More precisely, we could imagine, and this is just a sketch of how one might continue from this, instead of the standard relativistic symmetry where you have, lambda is some element of the Poincaré group, U is a unitary representation thereof, and rho is some general quantum state, then typically we say that if these two states are related by such a Poincaré transformation, they represent physically equivalent situations up to a conventional choice of coordinate frame. So what I'm proposing is that this equivalence class might be extended as follows. Instead of just considering unitary representations of the Poincaré group, we might consider a whole bunch of different boosts, translations, etc., and take a coherent sum of the unitaries with the caveat that this sum has to sum to a unitary, which is a non-trivial constraint. So it would be interesting to see how to implement that. But assuming that this coherent sum does sum to a unitary, then we could argue that if two pure states are related by such a coherent sum of Lorentz transformations or translations, they should be regarded as physically equivalent up to a choice of external frame. And if we apply the same reasoning to a density matrix, a possibly mixed state, we can expand that into a sum of pure projectors and apply this generalized unitary to each one of those. And then a further generalization suggests itself, which is we can allow these unitaries to depend on this index k, i.e., we can take also probabilistic mixtures of different unitary representations of different elements of the Poincaré group. So not just quantum superpositions, but also just classical probabilistic combinations. And actually, I think it would be an interesting program in itself to forget quantum mechanics and just look at what happens to probabilistic relativity. Interesting things might already come out of that. But this is just a sketch of what one could look at. That's the end. I imagine there are lots of questions because I left lots of time for them. So thanks.
What part of your thought experiment really depends on having a superposition rather than just a mixture of Bob being like a flip a coin and put Bob here, and if I get Taylor, I put him over there. I mean, what's the novel quantum feature here?
So I think, in a sense, Alice and Bob themselves wouldn't be so troubled because they don't have the power to manipulate each other's degrees of freedom. That's implicitly only my power in this external frame. But I think the main point is that if Bob was just in a probabilistic combination, I could imagine that in each one of the experiments, his marker is actually localized somewhere, and I just don't know where. So in that case, you could consistently have a single classical space-time manifold. And it would just be a disagreement if you like, a probabilistic disagreement about the labeling of the events. I'm afraid I can't make that more precise, but
consequence? I mean, like, do you have an interference thought experiment that does something?
I did play around with some things like that, trying to argue that if we assert that Alice and Bob's markers are both somehow localized with respect to some hidden variable that determines which event Bob's marker is actually localized to, that you can then derive some contradiction from a bell-type experiment or by showing interference with Bob's lab. But they tend to get rather messy and complicated, so.
So, I mean, there are other situations in physics where you have observers that don't agree on the quantum state they assign.
Mm.
So if you think of an entangled state, and then you have Alice and Bob, and Alice measures on her part, she finds spin up, then she would assign to the other half spin up.
Mm-hmm.
But Bob didn't see that, so he would still assign mixed state.
Right.
So you can see that Alice says, oh, it's localized upwards, whereas Bob would say it's somehow not localized. So I wonder if that is basically a situation like this, or whether it differs in some substantial way from this more general feature that observers sometimes don't agree on a quantum state.
I hadn't thought about comparing it to that example. If there's a connection, it's not obvious to me, but I agree that it's a compelling idea.
It's more a remark, and I'm sorry if it sounds like a bit of advertising, but this idea that somehow quantum probes define the evolution of the locality. And the name of quantum gravity has been developed recently. There's a framework for that called relative locality, which is exactly about how to extend the relativity principle to quantum probes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you work out, and there's certain things which have been worked out with this principle, and one of the first examples of a type of space-time which is completely delocalized, in fact, if you go back to the, go to the next, you know, we call it modular space. So let's say the quantum analog of Euclidean space has exactly the property that you... Mm-hmm. So you might be interested in looking at this development.
I haven't counted modular space before. You say this comes out of relative locality.
Yeah.
And this is the picture of space-time which is different to the standard.
Completely different. It's a picture of space-time which is by essence quantum. And where you can show that once you have it, you recover the usual notion of space as a singular limit.
Mm.
Okay, so if you do something very violent, you can recover it, if you do something very violent. But it creates notion of space that have no, you know, that we are usually not talking about. But once you have the physical principle, so it's exactly, you know.
Okay, good. Potentially that saves me from reinventing the wheel.
No, because it's not the wheel. You're looking at it from a different perspective, but I'm just saying it's a recent idea that space itself is not one, it's not sacred, or that it should be defined within.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying you should connect to that.
Thanks.
Wondering, do you know your last slide talked about this extended symmetry group where linear combinations of Lorentz transformation unitaries that were also unitary? Can you say anything about what sorts of unitary representations of Lorentz groups have non-trivial examples of that, where linear combinations can also be unitary?
Nope. I haven't looked at this in any detail yet.
There's one which it is the one that realized this modular space, and it comes from Cannon's matter, and it's called the Zak transformation.
ZAK.
So we describe that very precisely. It's kind of a magic of how you make a superposition of space which have their own notion of locality. It's certainly not the skin.
Does it rely on the Vigna representation then?
On the what?
Vigna representations.
No. No, no, just it's not field. Here is not talking about field, it's talking about localization. Where is X? So it's just about finding new representations of the violent or Heisenberg relation. That's really what it is.
So another comment on that, which is those linear superpositions of unitaries are also connected to superpositions of different causal structures. Because if I have a system A, which turns into system B at a later time, and an ancilla system, it's called E. So A and E are originally maximum entangled state. Now, if I apply identity to A and E, so A becomes B, E becomes whatever, then A is cause-effect related to B. If I apply a swap, then A and B are common cause related because there was that maximum entangled state. In A and E, E becomes B. Another. So if you use the square root of a swap operation, which is basically the unitary identity plus I swap, so it's a linear combination of the identity and the swap unitary, then in some sense you can have a linear superposition of those two different causal structures. So these unitaries that are themselves linear combinations of other unitaries, I think, have relevance for questions about indefinite causal structure.
Right, this being an example of the superposition of A causing B versus A and B being spaced, like, or like
having A and B having a common cause, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I can't comment further on that because it's a pretty new idea, as you could probably tell. So I'm curious to see what other ideas it generates.
More questions? If there are no more questions, we can end this here then.